Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. It is time for Author of the Week. This week, Raymond Ibrahim, widely published author, public speaker, specializing in the Middle East and Islam. He's been a guest lecturer at universities all over, including U.S. Army War College, the National Defense Intelligence College. He's briefed government agencies such as U.S. Strategic Command and the Defense Intelligence Agency. Born in the U.S. and raised in the U.S. by Egyptian parents who were born and raised in the Middle East. It is Raymond Ibrahim, the book Defenders of the West, The Christian Heroes Who Stood Against Islam. And first question, why write the book?
Well, in many ways, this book is a sort of a companion piece to my other book right before it, which came out in 2018. And that book is called Sword and Scimitar, 14 Centuries of War Between Islam and the West. And basically, that first book, I looked at 8 decisive battles between Islam and the Western world from the 7th century all the way up until really America's first war as a nation against the Barbary pirates, which was also in the context of Islam. That book did very well, and there was some sort of demand for a follow-up. And what I did in this new book, Defenders of the West, is I looked at 8 decisive men. So the difference here is the lives of these men that I've chosen and profiled in their wars vis-a-vis Islam, they're not necessarily decisive. They didn't necessarily lead to decisive outcomes. Some did, some didn't, some were abysmal failures. But really what I looked at is men who gave so much as by way of courage, self-sacrifice, and did everything to sort of, you know, stem the tide of the Islamic advance. And a lot of these guys were also, they were kings and nobles, and they had a lot to live for. They were wealthy, but they actually went straight into the fray. And another reason I wanted to write it was sort of to remind Western people that I think there's a certain cynicism that we all have about our leaders, and we see them as by default having to be self-serving, possibly cowardly, politically correct, and all these negative things that we just assume it has to be that way. So I wanted to point out and show that no, it actually wasn't always that way, that oftentimes great leaders were the ones who sacrificed the most for their beliefs and their people and their families and their civilization. So, those are just some of the reasons I put this book together.
Yeah, it seems to me as if this whole issue is one that is gravely misunderstood. It gets painted with an incorrect broad brush. And so many of us grew up and we were essentially taught that the Crusades were when Christians decided to go and try to take as much land from the Muslims as possible. And that really isn't a fair characterization, I think, if you look at the history. How do you think we ended up with that being the conventional wisdom?
Well, before I get to that, because you bring up a great point, and that's another reason that I wanted to write this book as a corrective to all these false interpretations that are being peddled widely all throughout. As far as that particular one, the Crusades, it's just always presented in a vacuum. Unfortunately, if you mention to anyone, any general average American, say, the conflicts between Islam and the West, from a historical perspective, it'll invariably, in their mind, always be the Crusades. And they forget that the Crusades were a belated response, 4-century-old belated response to 4 centuries of jihad that actually swallowed up 3/4 of the Christian world. So people don't really remember and don't realize and understand that what we commonly say is the Islamic world, let's say all of North Africa from Morocco to Egypt and the Middle East, Syria and Turkey, that actually was the heart of the Christian world in the 7th century when these wars began, when actually Muhammad died and the beginning of Islam. So really the Crusades were a response to, and right before the Crusades in the 11th century in 1095, and they were called, was one particularly atrocious attack on Christians. Literally, according to the sources, the Turks were running amok in Asia Minor, which is today Turkey, and which, of course, was one of the oldest Christian regions at the time. And the sources say tens of thousands of Christians were killed and enslaved, and thousands of churches burned, And that's really the, so that's the context of why the Crusades came forth. As to your question, why is it being taught this way? Well, I think there's many reasons we can get into, but I think a lot of it is actually intentional, and it's sort of part and parcel with this sort of idea that we just, you just have to somehow demonize Western, especially Christian history, and always present the other as somehow being the noble victim and so forth, which, but I'm sorry that, you know, the sources do not confirm that, that thesis that is so embraced by everyone. You can see it in Hollywood movies like you know, Kingdom of Heaven and all these sorts of books, but it's just, it's completely false, unfortunately, for them.
You know, we're talking with our author of the week this week, Raymond Ibrahim, the book Defenders of the West, The Christian Heroes Who Stood Against Islam. You have the chapters broken up based around certain characters. Were there any of these that you found to be a favorite of yours?
You know, it's interesting. I really can't say that. I really like them all, maybe because I'm sort of, you know, their, I'm their father, I'm their creator. So they're each dear to me in their own way. But I've shared the book with several colleagues, and I find it interesting that many of them, when I ask them, who's your favorite, they all gave me a different character. So I think what's good or unique is that each of them and their lives, because they're so different, sort of resonate differently with different readers. Because it really goes across the three main theaters of war between Islam and Christendom, which were, of course, Spain, the Reconquista, trying to get Spain out, Islam out of Spain, and that's two chapters. Then the Holy Land, of course, three chapters, and then three more chapters for the Balkans, and which is probably the most recent ones. Again, and that's a very interesting and often forgotten story. You know, one of the problems is we often hear, you know, the Ottomans, we hear the Seljuks, we hear the Abbasids, the Umayyads, and we don't realize that all of these names really came down and boiled down to groups that really fought the same way and believe it or not, and implemented their Islam, not unlike ISIS, the Islamic State. So this really radical group that we were told is, has done nothing to do with Islam. When you look at the history as chronicled and documented in this book, you see that actually what ISIS says and does is what the caliphs and the sultans and the emirates said and did.
Obviously, these two religions still prominent in the world today. And looking centuries back and this period of time that you focus on these characters in your book, is there still a connection, if you will? Is the relationship that exists between Christianity and Islam today have any residue, if you will, from that period of time?
Yeah, I think so. And when I bring up ISIS, you know, it's intentional. You see a continuum. There's definitely a continuum from the very beginning, from the first chapters. That go back to, you know, in this book, in Defenders of the West, the first chapter really starts in the 11th century. And you go on until the 16th, I believe, century. And you're going to see that the sorts of things that happened are very much like what we call today radical Islam. It's the same thinking, same pattern. So, for example, the Islamic State, when they conquered any nation, you remember what they did to the Yazidis, as well as the Christians. They enslaved them. They demanded tribute, which is called jizya. So you'll see that actually in the history, that's precisely what also happened. I think the difference, the break, is more from the Christian side, where most Christians, for various reasons, whether they're taught that their ancestors were the bad guys in the guise of the Crusaders, or whether they've been completely taught that, you know, their religion is always about turning the other cheek. And, you know, I get a lot into the concept of just war theory and, you know, and things that I think a lot of people have forgotten, the sort of watered down passive form of Christianity, which I'm not saying, you know, applies to all Christians in the West, certainly not, but it's become very dominant. So there's definitely a break from Christian groups by and large, whereas Islam is still, and Islam is in many ways is doing the same thing it did in the histories when it was weak. So during Spain, for example, when Islam was strong, it was doing the sort of ISIS sort of things. When the Reconquista, you know, turned the tide and Muslims came under the authority of Christians, they actually, based on the doctrine of Taqiyya, were allowed to convert to and get baptized and go to church and participate in communion and so forth. And they did this for generation after generation, but they were crypto Muslims who at home were preaching jihad against the infidel. And whenever there was a chance to actually subvert, they would go for it or rebel, they would do it. I find it interesting because that doctrine, you can still see manifestations of it in certain pockets amongst Muslims when they're living in Western or non-Western or non-Muslim regions. It's actually still being taught that you should, you know, outwardly conform and inwardly still maintain your distance and possible hatred, and et cetera, because it's from the Quran, this doctrine.
I find oftentimes, even if you're reflecting back on history and you do depart from that Christian crusaders bad, Muslim good, and you just talk about some of the historical facts, then you get painted as Islamophobic. I imagine that's probably something that you have been subject to. What do you say to people who do conflate those things together?
It's just, it's another way to silence, you know, honest, sincere criticism. It's, you know, we have these keywords, just like the word racist, you know, it just shuts up anyone and scares people from just making any, what could be an objective and rational observation. So the same thing with this word, Islamophobia. It was coined, just, it's the only way to shut people up from, and I personally don't, sponsor or participate in, you know, attacking Islam just to attack it or mock it or anything like that, but to actually delve into the doctrines and the history and, you know, try to make sense of why, you know, what's happening is happening. And people don't have an inkling of how bad the situation is, because once again, thanks to an absent media who goes out of its way to paint, you know, to try to give you the opposite, to try to enforce a narrative that in this case, of course, Islam is peaceful and Muslims are wonderful and it's your fault because you're a racist and Islamophobe. So it's just, it's unfortunate that they do that. You know, they just suppress people from the ability to talk. And I think, I find throughout history that leads to worse. It's actually better to have people speak rationally and have a discourse openly than to keep sort of the boiling pot covered and not give it, you know, letting it get the steam out a little bit. And then it just simmers over, and you see that happen oftentimes in history, unfortunately.
Finally, what's your goal? What do you hope people read your book? What do you want them to walk away with?
Basically, I'd like them to walk away with the truth, and you know, we need historical context. You can't understand where you are, certainly not where you're going, without knowing where we came from. So these books really cover centuries, and like I said earlier, I'm offering them as correctives to these widespread false narratives that just make things worse. If you tell people Islam is a religion of peace, and if there's any problem, it's because Muslims have grievances against you and you're a racist and you're an Islamophobe, that really makes and exacerbates the issue, makes it much worse. The Crusades were actually just wars. They were called for. They were actually a noble thing. Now, of course, there's excesses done in whatever battle and by whoever fights. But in principle, these were not men going to colonize the Middle East or racists or xenophobes as they are presented today. They were actually acting on noble impulses. They were actually trying to provide aid and assistance to their co-religionists in the East who were being mauled and butchered in ways that most people have no idea. So ultimately, just to get a corrective on reality and knowing where you came from will help us sort of formulate, including policies, of how to move forward in the now.
Well, I want to thank you for the book. Thank you for time being with us this morning. Our author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, Raymond Ibrahim. The book is Defenders of the West, The Christian Heroes Who Stood Against Islam, on Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.